I wear high heels and I have like acrylic nails, and I don't particularly want to get those dirty. And so when they look at me and go, well, you're an engineer, I'm like, yeah, but not like how you think.
The face of engineering is changing and evolving, but who are the faces behind it, and more specifically, the women? Let us take you on a journey of an exciting career that celebrates success and embraces failure. I'm your host, Ganan Adamu, and together with The Common Room, we bring you The Face of Engineering. Today, I'm in conversation with Laura Wang.
My name is Laura Wang. I am an aerospace design engineer at BAE Systems, and I currently work in program integration.
So what is an aerospace design engineer?
So aerospace is basically all things to do with putting things in the air. Part of my job is looking at military jets and designing the systems in military jets.
Oh my God, that's amazing. And how on earth did you get, you know, into that?
It's a funny story, because I've never really, until I worked in the industry, I never really liked planes. I didn't really know anything about military jets. I thought, well, I wanted to be an engineer when I was in sixth form. And I wanted to try it out. I actually started in civil engineering before I went into aerospace. And then at university, BAE Systems, the company, were advertising their internships. And I thought, well, I'll give it a go. But I don't really know that much about jets or planes in general. And I ended up just learning about it on the job. More than I knew anything from my own experience.
That is amazing. So what or who would you say inspired you to get into engineering?
It was actually my teachers. So my physics teachers and my maths teachers were the ones who suggested it. I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I was younger. I thought maybe pharmacy. My mum wanted me to be a pharmacist. So it was science. I love science, and pharmacy was a STEM subject, so I thought that's what I was going to do. And it wasn't until my physics teacher said, well, there's an engineering education scheme which is run by the Engineering Development Trust, and he wanted to get a group of students involved. And so I thought, oh, okay, well, I'll give that a go. That sounds interesting. My maths teachers and my physics teachers both thought that because I enjoyed the logical aspects of the science and the maths, that maybe engineering would be a good route for me. But it wasn't like they pushed me to it. It was just a suggestion. But it was a scheme where for 6 months we worked with a real engineering company on a real life project. So that extracurricular activity. So we used to meet after school, and some real life engineers came into the school, gave us some tasks, an activity to look at, and it was an ongoing 6 month project to look at. For us, it was how to detect plastic gas pipes. So the engineers were actually from National Grid. And, you know, that's not something that we learn at school, like how to apply the stuff that we learn in our physics and our maths, like A-levels and GCSEs. So going onto these projects and sort of seeing the science and maths in action was really quite cool, and that's what I started to really enjoy about engineering. It's like the problem-solving aspect of it, using the science, that, you know, the principles of science and maths.
I remember when I was younger, when I was in senior school, and I hated maths. I absolutely hated maths, but I loved sciences. And I remember my maths teacher, you know, was able then to show me why maths matters in human everyday life. And that's when I started connecting more with maths. Would you say engineering was the same for you?
Yeah, and also I suppose at university, you learn the principles and theories as you do at school. And it's only when you really put it into action and you see it applied to real life examples you really get to appreciate it. And I always say that engineering is a bit like magic, because it's what makes things fly, it's what makes things work. Mobile phones, for example, it's all science and it's all engineering. And to be able to understand that means that you can then start thinking about everything that you use in your everyday life, and then think, oh, well, someone's had to design that, and someone's had to make that work, and those people are the engineers.
So what did you study at university? Or universities?
So I went to Loughborough University and I studied systems engineering.
And were there many women on that course? And even was there much diversity?
We were quite good in our course for women. We mixed with the electrical and electronic engineering classes for some of our modules. And they didn't seem to have as many. I mean, I won't say that we were 50-50, we weren't anywhere like that. I'd say we're probably about 15% for women in terms of like diversity and other aspects of like ethnicity, for example. We had a really good mix there, but for women, not so much.
And so going into aerospace, is there that many women?
There's been a big change I've seen. I think there's obviously there's still more to do. So when I started 10 years ago, it's quite a funny story. I worked in a building where there weren't that many women on the engineering floor, the floor below us, but the women's toilets for the floor for the engineers, because we didn't have that many, well, there was only one toilet, and the cleaners used it as their cupboard. So when I started, I kicked up a bit of a fuss because they were like, oh, there's toilets downstairs. And it wasn't like I was the only woman in that engineering floor, but there were so few of us that there was only one toilet and it was the cleaning cupboard. So,
well, were you able to implement any change?
Well, I was only there for 10 weeks and they were like, oh, this girl, she's kicking up such a fuss for nothing.
No, but you know what? And I think it's things like that matter. I mean, it's crazy because obviously we're in 2020 and things haven't changed as much as we thought it would. So my hope is by 2025, I'm hoping we will be having less of these conversations. You know, that's my thinking anyway. Now, you know, in terms of your family life, was engineering something that your family would have picked or, I would say picked as your chosen career?
No, definitely not. So when I was younger, my dad wanted me to be a doctor, and my mum wanted me to be a pharmacist. At first, I wanted to be a doctor too, but I get queasy at the sight of blood, and I figured maybe doctor may not be the best way for me to go. that was kind of my thinking at the time, and then pharmacy was the sort of other option. The older generation, they didn't really care for me going to university. And then when I said I was going to do sort of a postgrad, so I got a postgrad certificate in systems engineering as well. They're like, well, why does a woman need to be that educated? Like their thinking was that I would scare off potential husbands.
You know what? It's crazy, isn't it? It's absolutely crazy. And that happens across the African community as well, where it's like, you know, don't be too intelligent.
It's such a 21st century in the UK as well, and they still have that sort of mentality. And then when I said I wanted to do engineering, it was even worse. They're like, well, why would you want to do that? then men really wouldn't want to marry you. Okay, fine. If they don't want to marry me, then they don't want to marry me.
It's simple.
I still want to be an engineer.
But I bet now they are so proud of all the achievements that you've had.
Yeah, they've come around, particularly my dad. Last year, I won an award with the Royal Aeronautical Society. It was the Herbert Lasser Award, which was for my contribution to the aerospace and aviation industry.
Amazing.
And he actually came along to the ceremony, and I was like tearing up because like I've never seen him like be that supportive and proud as well, because he was literally going around going, yep, shout out to my daughter, that's my daughter. And
it's, oh, it was I love so that. Nice. That is so sweet. Now, in terms of your work, I want you to tell us, you know, the type of planes and jets you've worked on.
I've worked on a whole variety. Well, I've Been with BAE Systems for 10 years as an intern and until now. And I've worked on Hawk, which is the smaller aircraft which we use to train our fast jet pilots in the RAF and in other countries. I've worked on the Typhoon,
wow.
The Eurofighter Typhoon, which is pretty cool. But my favourite is the F-35 Lightning II. Which is the American aircraft, but the UK have bought quite a few of them. And they work with the new aircraft carriers that the UK have. And that was a really exciting project. Not merely because the F-35 is a good looking aircraft, but it can do something pretty cool too. And that is that it can take off and land vertically.
Crazy.
Yeah, you think about that with an actual aircraft. I mean, the Harrier jump jet, which it's before my time. I retired before, really. I got an opportunity to work on it in the UK. That used to do the same sort of thing. It used to land vertically. But since that retired, we didn't have that capability until the F-35B. I love that jet so much. I'm an actual like plane nerd when it comes to the F-35.
You know what? It's so fascinating hearing you talk about these planes. What's the reaction that people get when you actually say, I'm an engineer?
Sometimes they don't believe me. Sometimes they go, oh, cool. What does that mean? So I think that there's still that social perception of engineers being in sort of overalls and hard hats and sort of like with, you know, tools, for example. And yeah, some engineers do that sort of thing, but there's lots of engineers who also don't. And so me as an engineer, I'm mainly computer based and desk based. I wear high heels and I have like acrylic nails, and I don't particularly want to get those dirty. And so when they look at me and go, you're an engineer, I'm like, yeah, but not like how you think.
It's crazy. I remember when I would go out as a BBC member of staff, it would be, you work for the BBC, and you think, well, what do you expect? You know, what are you expecting to see? Whereas I came in with my red lipstick, you know, with big hooped earrings. I was just not what they expected. And it's amazing how people kind of, when you tell them your qualifications or you tell them your background, immediately the way they talk to you changes, and it should never be like that.
Yeah, it's strange, the perceptions people have of, and also with our particular job in defence, obviously you have to get security clearance. With that sometimes comes a little bit of racial discrimination, racial tensions when they ask me certain questions about my background and ethnicity. There are other ways of saying it rather than just outright accusing me of being a Chinese spy, for example.
No, you know what? I'm not even surprised. I'm not surprised whatsoever. You know, and that leads me nicely into, so you're part of the, you know, the diversity steering group as well. How important is that?
So I used to be part of the diversity steering group for BAE. And I really enjoyed it, and I thought that we were making change, and I feel like we did make some, but I get impatient. That's just one of my traits. I sometimes, if I don't see change happening quickly enough, I get really frustrated. And I've had to learn through working in this industry that change doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
In particular, the industry that we are in aerospace and defense, things definitely don't change overnight, and it's a gradual thing. And so when I was on the steering group, there was a lot of talked about bringing in certain so particularly for me, the banter versus bullying campaign was something that I led whilst I was on the, well, I worked in HR for a little bit. So I actually came out of engineering and worked in HR and put together a campaign definitely supported by Stonewall, who are an organization supporting LGBT communities. We put together this campaign. We took it to all the business units, and I was really scared that there'd be a lot of backlash and negative like feedback from it. But what was really nice, as a surprise, that they really took to it, and people actually started thinking about their actions. And then, you know, it wasn't mandatory for them to then come out with a pledge to actually speak out if they hear it. But many of them did. They actually signed the pledge and very proudly displayed that on the, we had like a pledge wall. And even if they didn't do it as proactively as maybe I would have liked, it just getting them thinking about it and having those conversations, having those frank conversations as well.
What would you say would be your dream role as an engineer?
Oh, that's a really tough question. I don't know if I have a dream role, such as, I mean, because my career has been a bit of a dream so far. And that sounds really cliche, but...
I totally get it.
I loved everything that I've done. So with my roles, the fact that I get to like meet different people, collaboration for me is a big deal. I always think that you can learn so much from speaking to others and working with others. And the fact that I get to do that, I get to travel and actually work on exciting programs as well.
Well, you get to work on planes. That's like that's crazy. Do you actually get to sit in them?
They especially like using me as a test subject. It sounds really strange, but part of human factors engineering is looking at what we call like the anthropometrics, so like the sizes of people. And for me, because I'm female and I am only 4'10", I don't look like your normal pilot, if that makes sense. I am a lot shorter and also female. There's not a lot of female pilots, fast jet pilots. There are more and more now, but things like cockpits have always really been designed around the average height man.
Okay.
And a slim build man as well. And so for me, I'm 4'10", I'm not slim build and I'm female. So they dress me up in sort of military pilot gear. And then they stick me in the cockpits and they just ask me, can I reach this? Can I see this?
Exactly. So one of the things that I'm always interested in, especially is, you know, with engineers and scientists, you know, you go into this career wanting to, you know, to make the world in a sense a better place. But also as engineers and scientists, they can use that power for bad as well. But my question to you really is, what would the ideal world look like?
One of my pet peeves is with technology as it is now, it's getting a lot easier to access information, but it also is easier to access the wrong information and false information. And it's a lot easier to spread messages of hate, for example. Yeah. And so my sort of like dream world is a world where technology isn't used for that, is not used to spread hate. And we could all live a nice, peaceful world where everyone's treated as a human being and they have all of their rights, and they're not differentiated because of one thing, or you know, whether or the color of their skin, their gender, their sexual orientation, you know, they're not, you know, we can all live together and not hate is ultimately what I think a dream world would be.
Yeah. So I want to finish off with your hobbies. Roller derby.
Yes.
That is, you know what, that scares me, but it's something that I think I would enjoy. How did you get into that?
Oh, it's such a fun sport. So I'm not very good. I'm still working up my, what we used to call minimum skills, so we've taken that away now, but I'm sort of working my way up to play in the teams at like leagues. And I'm fortunate enough to be with a league called Manchester Roller Derby, who are fantastic and really supportive, very inclusive. And for me, who's not particularly sporty, I like to try different things. So I've done all sorts, like play like a canoe polo and stuff like that. So I like to try out different sports, but I'm not a sporty person. I'm not, definitely not athletic. And so there are certain aspects of like skating and roller derby which I struggle with. But with the league being so supportive, they take the time to like coach me through, and whenever I have an injury, it doesn't like bother them that I'm taking time out and coming back and starting afresh. But
you're making me feel like I need to have a hobby right now. I was thinking about this. I was like, I need a hobby, and roller derby just seems like, I don't even know if we've got one in Liverpool, but I might have to check it out and see if we do. So Laura, what are you most proud of?
I think that's a really difficult question, but I think when looking most recently, I've become a chartered engineer. And for me, that was a big achievement, because I tell lots of people to go out and get professionally registered. I'm very involved with the Royal Aeronautical Society, who are a professional engineering institute. I'm chair of the membership services board. I'm a council member, and I sit on the Young Persons Committee and the Continuing Professional Development Committee. And with all of those activities, I'm always advocating for people to go out and get professionally registered, to get their chartership. And then I'm saying, yes, go out and do this, but I don't have it myself. And so I felt like a real hypocrite. And I mean, the application has been there for so long on my desk, my desktop. And I finally decided, you know, I think I'll do it. But one of the hardest things about it is trying to big yourself up in a way.
Okay.
Like trying to write about yourself in a good light. And I find that really difficult, because I don't think what I do is special. I think my job is cool, but I don't think I'm special. So trying to put that on paper to apply to get professionally registered was such a big deal. Like I found it really hard to put that into words, and luckily I had some really good supportive colleagues and friends who helped me look through my application, and they were like, well, you're not saying enough about how good you are here, you're just stating that that's what you did. I mean, why is that good? And I really struggled with that. So I guess, yeah, chartership, being able to go get through that hurdle of being able to write something about myself in that way has been a big achievement for me personally.
That was Laura, the British engineer who's confounding expectations across the board to keep progressing in a field that she loves. She's definitely the new face of the right stuff. In our next episode, I talk to chemical and nuclear engineer Gina Baker on The Face of Engineering.